Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I want you to imagine everything I tell you as if you're there yourself.
Welcome to DragonCast.
Do you remember any of the events that led up to your disappearance?
Whilst we're waiting for House of the Dragon Season 2, Jamie East and Chris Mandel dive into some acclaimed series just ripe for a bit of analysis.
Don't come unless you leave your front door open. You have to invite me in.
First is Britt Marling's cult classic, The OA. Hey everybody, hope your week is going well. Welcome to DragonCast. This is the bonus episode, the OA, in which myself, Jamie East, and...
myself, Chris Mandel.
We'll be covering the season finale of part one of Britt Marling's The OA. Eight episodes in, we've followed it straight from the beginning. Just a quick recap is that Chris had never watched this before. I had watched it before. I loved it. And it's been quite the wild journey for young Mr. Mandel, hasn't it?
You've been taking on a wild ride. I think we didn't do an episode for episode seven because it was such a setup to the finale and it didn't feel like there was a lot to discuss. But six I thought was just stunning. I think it's been a really, and I still think actually having seen the finale, I think it's a really audacious show. There really is nothing like it. It sort of breaks all the rules, but I think maybe with this final episode, there's a sense of it having to try and behave more like a normal TV show and that being a bit of an undoing for it.
I'm sensing a but from you. You enjoyed it. You enjoyed the series.
I'd actually do a double but, which is I enjoyed it a lot, but some of the things that happened in this episode really threw me and I felt quite let down by some of it. But again, you know, it's there's nothing like it. I think it's been such a good show. I can't quite tell how I'm supposed to feel. So I'm glad I've got you here as someone who has seen it before. Because I'm very confused and very frightened by what I just watched.
So, I mean, it began with, forgetting episode seven, which was kind of like a step, you know, almost like a sidebar to the whole series, really. We picked up where episode six had ended, which was with the policeman, the sheriff holding a gun to Hap's head saying, "What the fuck is going on here? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna shoot you, you bastard." And as you correctly predicted, Hap used the powers of Prairie and Homer as a carrot and dangled that to cure the sheriff's wife who has ASL. No, not ASL. ALS.
ALS.
Or some kind of locked-in syndrome.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. I really enjoyed this section of the show.
Me too. The way that they shot Prairie and Homer doing the movements, really odd. It's sort of from under them. It's sort of shot from like the breastbone up. It's quite weird. Yeah. And it's quite like, oh my God, I feel like I was dying. I was like, am I like, what's going on? Mm. I still don't understand how it works, but I think that this is one of those things with the OA, like it actually doesn't matter. The point is they've cured her and she had the fifth movement, which is kind of, yeah, we did. I just had this feeling that why would you introduce a woman who's got an incurable disease?
Mm-hmm. No, you were bang on. You were
absolutely
bang on.
I was really shocked. that then Hap shot the sheriff.
But before then, he didn't kill the deputy, though.
Very good.
Thank you. What I really enjoyed about that wasn't just the fact that the movements were working and the way it was shot and stuff. It was the fact that this poor woman has known about this destiny and fate for all the time she was locked in. So, you know, she has been holding on to this fifth movement in her mind, been unable to articulate it to any other living being, but knowing that this moment was coming. She said that she was you would be helped by two captive angels. And the fifth movement, she swallowed a white moth and I've held it inside. Like proper goosebump writing for me. That was
incredible.
It was amazing.
Because I think also, like, later in the episode, there's a lot about, like, what does it mean to have faith in something, if it's true or not, you know?
Yeah.
But, and it, obviously this story could be complete bullshit, but what an amazing sort of allegory for someone that has lived with faith for decades, because there's no other way. You have to believe it's going to happen. Otherwise you wouldn't want to wake up in the morning.
And I love the way that she very slowly started getting better. It's just kind of like, and, but then just kind of seemed to one slight weird bit of continuity that I picked up on watching it the second time around. Was that Hap had to, there was the thing with the lights and the electricity went down, but Hap was like, no, it's fine because I've got the infrared camera. So they put on the infrared camera, which was how the sheriff noticed that his wife was like sitting up or moving. But Hap was also able to mimic the movement as well. And I was like, you've not been able to see them do it. Because when I watched it, I was like, that's a really clever way of stopping Hap from seeing the fifth movement.
Oh, because it's only on the thermal heat camera, but he sort of got it.
And I was a bit like, I didn't realize maybe a bit of continuity, maybe a bit of a glitch, but I just, fucking love that whole section.
How many times do you think you'd have to see that movement before you memorized it? I think for me, 7.
It's not so much the actual movements, is it? It's the intensity with which
the
it's
belief,
done.
Right.
And the belief and the synchronization with whoever else is you're doing. It's kind of like the ultimate steps routine, isn't it?
It is.
It's tragedy. Like... tragedy in the church times like a million.
And it's like H and Claire.
You can't just have Lisa Scott Lee doing that. It's got to be that. With Claire Richards and H, like, equally going...
Well, I think, to take your steps analogy one step further, and Claire do the routine to 5, 6, 7, 8, it's not as good without all of them. You need all of them to do the movements. Ditto, S Club 7. It's all well and good.
This is what Britt Marling wanted.
She'll be literally quitting screenwriting now after hearing how little we've understood her work. She's like, fuck it, I'm gonna go and sell cars instead.
It slightly, and one thing that I'd either missed or was confused about, and it might have been because I was just looking at my phone or something whilst I was watching this episode, I'm still not sure why Hap dumped her. You know, we also learned was that she didn't escape. Hap literally just dumped her because he didn't need her anymore, which was a bit...
But he kind of does, right? Like, he still needs... Well, he needs 5 people.
The only kind of thread of sanity I can glean from kind of that bit in the plot is that maybe we're meant to be thinking that doesn't make a lot of sense.
What's I think going so, on?
Because then we go into, like, the second act of this finale, which is centered around her... current day disciples, friends, group, whatever, all investigating whether or not she's real. And we see two sides of the coin. We see a couple of them, like, looking, and it shows you how early the internet was at this point. Was just like looking on YouTube to try and verify the story. And nowadays, not a problem. Social media would have had that covered. And they managed to find an old video of her playing the violin in in the subway, which for some reason confirmed their story. I think maybe because one of her early stories was when she told about how she'd first met Hap. And that was playing the violin in the subway. So that was it. That was them. Great. She's real. We can blah, 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 blah. And then your man had broken into her house at nighttime. We saw the creepy dolls. And as soon as you saw those dolls, you thought, yeah, Prairie's mum is exactly the kind of person that would have a shelf of the dolls.
That's order from the catalogue.
They uncovered a box of books underneath her bed, which were almost too convenient.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think we were possibly meant to think. Convenient box, which was like a step-by-step guide to becoming the OA and confusing and
Homer's Odyssey. People.
Yeah, Homer's Odyssey was there. There was stories of near-death experiences. There was a whole thing on oligarchs, blah, 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 blah. A couple of things on that. Sorry, I'll ask you now. Do you believe her? Do you believe Prairie's story? Do you think she is the OA? Do you think that everything she said about Hap and Homer and her dad, all of that stuff is true?
I think, oh God, this is a really hard question to answer. I think yes, but I think the end with the shooting, they're doing the movements didn't actually mean nothing. It wasn't, they just distracted him. They could have, like, you got a banjo out and played a song and it would have distracted him. Like, the movements didn't really do anything. And I think that is what makes me feel like it is all bullshit.
Okay. So I agree with you. I think she's real. The only thing that doesn't tally up with all the books and stuff is the fact that her mum and dad knew that she was Russian and came from an oligarch because they went and got her from her sister at the beginning.
Yeah, that's true.
And let's... The shooting. So if you look at it from the perspective that you just said, was that correct? The shooting, their movements had no real bearing on the shooter being captured. That was the guy worked in the kitchen, just ran out. You could argue that he was distracted, maybe, you know,
yeah,
but you suspect that the guy would have tackled him to the ground anyway. But that's not why they were doing the movements. They've never ever said they were doing the movements for anything other than one reason,
which is
to go to another dimension.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So they've never, throughout the whole season, getting that fifth movement was integral to opening up whatever it was, the portal, however it was they described it, the rings of Saturn, Jupiter, all of that kind of stuff, was to go to another place. And all five of them completed all five movements, and that resulted in Prairie getting shot. And having an NDE after all five movements have been completed. So my theory is that it worked because their ultimate aim was to see where she would go. And she left. And that's where she was going in the back of that ambulance. She was, I think she said something like, I'm ready now, or I can see where I need to go now. Or something like that.
Okay. That's a really, really helpful explanation.
That's my take on it. So I think that the shooter was actually a tool in order, whatever fate or destiny or whatever made all five of them be in that canteen at the time, doing the movements at a time, and the literally the final nail in the coffin was that it caused, their movements caused that bullet to hit Prairie.
And that's, she knew, she had some premonition in the bath that she needed to
she was
be
like,
there.
I know what I need. I know. And she, that's why she was stood outside the window. She didn't come in,
And also, there has to be something that let her dad was like, yeah, go. He sort of let her go in a way that is sort of, I suppose the point is that divine intervention doesn't look like what you think it looks like.
Yeah. There's no angel floating down. There's no bright light. There's no choir.
And the five in the canteen, do you think it was that because there was a shooter and they might all die, it was like, this is our only chance to do this.
See, that was my favorite moment of the whole series of that was like proper goosebump moment underneath the tables where they all realized that this was it. This was why I think, you know, and I loved it. And I rewound it and watched it again because they clock each other under the table. The teacher kind of like realizes.
Teacher coming back is great.
Coming really back good. In is great. They just get this kind of, you know, it's the back of the neck kind of thing, isn't it? Where they just think, holy fuck, this is it. This is why we're here. This is, you know, and I loved that bit. Absolutely not, loved it.
I think I thought while I was watching the show that they were supposed to come together to prevent, I thought like a bomb. I thought there was going to be some like reverse. Yeah. I thought the movements were about reversing time and the two steps were reversing death. We sort of talked about this the other week. I was what does three do? What does four do? What does five do? I thought the greatest, you know, the most amplified version of what they're doing when they reverse someone dying is reversing time. And if you fuck around with it too much or you do it wrong or you do it a different way, that's when you move into like a different timeline that it was.
But they'd said it all the way through the season. Prairie, you know, has always said, we need the five movements. Well, I think she said so she can go and find her father or she can, you know, to enter this dimension.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that was really interesting. I actually read some reviews of this episode this morning because I was very interested in how it was received at the time. And it actually got a lot of negative reviews, specifically because it aired during a period of a lot of school shootings. Yeah. And it was seen as very crass and it was seen as inappropriate. I think watching it with
arguably probably right.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think the way that it is sort of like, you don't even see the guy's face, but I think the way that it's done is a little bit hard to watch at times.
Yeah, that's true.
Easier for us in the UK to have a bit more critical distance from that sort of thing as it reflects the lives we have. I thought it was amazing. I thought it felt, you know, very interesting and it was an interesting
choice. High stakes, didn't it? It felt...
Yes.
I
also thought that, just to get back to what you said earlier, is she lying or is she not? I mean, I would really wanted to see what happened after. Why did Hap shoot the sheriff? Because
they didn't need them. They got the movement.
Obviously, we don't really know because we don't spend any more time with him after that point. But Hap is going to try and recreate the movements without Prairie and with himself.
Wow.
Is he thinking he's going to teach them the fifth? Like, it's sort of one of those things that I just think.
It's pretty open-ended. Yeah, it's pretty. And I think that's why it lends itself to, you know, I mean, I think what we're meant to think at the end of this is, was that all just bullshit? And did she just get shot, or was that all part of the original Angel's plan and destiny right from the beginning? If it's not, if that's the case, then what's happened to the other four of them? Where's Hap? What are they doing? Why hasn't he been caught? Why hasn't, you know, all of these kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, I thought the episode was really good, but one of the things I said at the top of the recording was, I feel like the rug pull is a bit late in the show.
What's the rug pull? The fact that it was the shooting as opposed to some divine...
No, the rug pull being like, surprise, she made it all up. Like, I don't think you should devote like 75% of your show. I think it should have a is she, isn't she element, and then you can sort of come down either way. But I think to pretend that it's not definitive, but it's a supernatural kind of show, and then to just go, actually, it's kind of made up. It sort of felt the pacing of that reveal was a bit so sudden that it really sort of put a bit of taste in my mouth, because I was like, I've actually been going along with this quite willingly.
But I think they needed to have that in there because the gang needed to break up in order to come back together.
Crisis of faith, like that's when you separates the wheat from the chaff, right? Like,
A couple of things that felt weird. Why did the mum keep the letter from the dad?
I actually wanted to ask you about this because one of my least favorite, one of my most annoying things on telly is when they cover a very important plot point and you have to pause
for no reason whatsoever.
So what was in the letter? I didn't even get to read it.
I think the letter was
her real dad.
It was the letter that she left on the day that she went missing to go and stand outside the Empire State, the Statue of Liberty to find her dad. So there was no reason whatsoever to hide that for all that amount of time.
No.
Whatsoever. And actually, it didn't even really make any sense for her to show it him now.
No, I thought that. My other question, you know, why is Riz Ahmed in the house? What was he doing there?
That was my question too. No idea.
I love him, but like, what is that part?
No idea.
And he works for the FBI? He's like...
No, just some counselor. Yeah, that was weird.
Oh, I thought he was an investigator.
No, I think he was like... he was just some kind of counselor on behalf of the FBI.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Try and help her bed in with her thoughts.
Yes.
Yeah, no idea why he was in the house either. I did love the dad stress breakfast, though. That was a proper dad thing to do.
Do you know, I really wanted a waffle when I was watching that.
And you just walk straight down in his pajamas, straight to the buffet bar, job done.
While black coffee, waffle. You don't get waffle makers like that in England, in like, you know, in like a Premier Inn. You don't get...
No, you don't. Like that. Well, we don't like... No, we're bad at breakfast and we have the full English and that's your fucking lot, right? Like your fucking lumpet.
Maybe a pan of raisins, if you're lucky. But also I feel like the British people are the least capable of using a waffle station. Like everyone would put too much batter in, not enough batter. They wouldn't want to, like, they would sit down, they would come back and burn. We'd just lockdown be too British
purchase
about it.
Yeah. Lockdown purchase in the East household was a very expensive waffle maker.
Do you use it?
We do.
Love a waffle maker.
Oh, they're great. But you have to be careful with how much you put in. Otherwise, it does turn into
the
everlasting porridge pot or whatever it's called. Yeah.
No, I want one of those little ones just as a single waffle. I thought that'd be quite...
You can get like a waffle eye and to put over the hob. They're pretty good.
Yeah. Anyway.
Question for you then, Chris Mandel.
Go on then,
we've done part one.
Yeah.
Do you want to do part two? Before you answer that question, I want to tell you this.
Okay.
It ends... pretty much thinking there's a part three coming. It is one of the most batshit 8 episodes of television you'll ever watch in your life.
Okay.
If you were left in any way confused by part one, part two will have you going, what in the living fuck have I just watched? Okay. Not saying that's a bad thing by any stretch of the imaginations, but I would say it's difficult because I think you should.
Yeah.
But do not expect the same emotional journey that you've been on with part one.
Right.
It gets very, very weird. It probably has more, it's quite Twin Peaksy. It's very surreal.
Okay.
And has one of, and then it's absolutely on its side. It has one of the most lunatic season finales you will ever see in your life. You will watch that and just go, Jesus fucking Christ, what?
I say let's do it.
Yeah.
But what if we check in every two episodes? Is that...
That's a good idea. I think that's fair. I think anyone listening that has already watched the OA part two will be okay.
I'm so intrigued. This is the thing, like, I really want to watch it. But is it a bit of a lost season 6 thing where it's like just weird? This isn't like huge, but I'm going to come out and say, does the whole next season take place in an alternative timeline?
I can't remember. I don't think we know is the answer. It doesn't.
Wow.
Look, let's just do it. Let's next week have watched first two episodes. They're not that long, you know.
No,
we'll just see where we get to.
I think that, because as soon as I heard, we've talked about season two a little bit here and there, and I kept getting this sense that it's not the most obvious follow through. And I kept thinking, you don't talk about going to different dimensions and alternative timelines without going
to a different dimension.
So I was thinking, and it's just, you know, again, like, are we sort of familiar with this show in a sense? And we know the sort of grooves and the things that it likes to do. And I think one of the things that I found hard about this finale was that the show's been actually very good about asking questions and then actually answering them. And I thought this episode, it was a bit too much asking and not enough answering.
Right.
Because at a certain point, right, you have to show your cards. And this show does seem like it's trying quite hard to avoid doing that.
I think it probably has to do with the way that they've probably written it. I think they wrote it as a trilogy.
I think it's such a shame it got cancelled. I mean,
it puts me off television. All this, and it's really only Netflix that do it a lot. A lot of most others have a bit more faith or at least a bit more patience.
Well, all the other streaming networks have a thing that makes them money that's not the streaming thing, right? Like Apple sell computers, Disney have theme parks. The problem with Netflix is they don't have a safety net. I mean,
puts me off watching debut seasons of television.
Well, yeah, that 18.
It's like, why do I invest it?
Oh, 1890. I fucking loved that. They cancelled it after like a month.
Yeah.
So you just think, well, there's no point watching it now.
Yeah, I may as well, I'll wait until I've got like four seasons backed up and everyone's telling me that it's amazing.
I need it if you. Yeah, I think it's a real problem, and I think the streaming bubble burst. We were like spoiled. There was so much getting made sort of around the time of the OA that was obviously never going to have a huge audience, and they just made it and made it and made it. And we got very used to there just being a lot of everything. And you look back on it and there's so many things that got cancelled.
Yeah, there probably was, wasn't there? Yeah.
There's a really good New Yorker profile from a few weeks ago of the like head of TV of Netflix.
Oh, really?
We might have talked about it on the podcast, but it's like a big profile. I can't remember her name, which is really bad. But they interview quite a lot of people that aren't happy with Netflix. And Raphael Bob Waksberg, who created BoJack Horseman, said by the end of the show, because that did six seasons, I think, executives at Netflix like didn't know the name of any of his characters. And they were like, how were you on like your third season now? He was like, no, it's six. And they were just like, oh, okay.
That's, which is really just rude, isn't it?
It's really bad. It's really bad. I think but yeah, other streamers have a better grasp on what's working and what's not. And what they
there was a quote from someone high up at Netflix, wasn't there, that just said, I can categorically state that we've never cancelled a show that didn't warrant cancelling, which basically means that there just weren't enough people watching it, I think. But it's just such a shite argument because it's like, well, Christ, Game of Thrones would have been canned, you know?
But also, you've got it's a very analog way of looking at it. And actually, they're actually behaving like a broadcast TV network. So it's like, you know, the whole point of what streaming was going to offer us was a way away from those metrics. Like, hey, we're going to make TV for like underrepresented people, TV in different languages that you might not think that wouldn't survive on traditional channels. And I think like that is one of the things that it's like, you are now just operating like HBO. And you just want big hits. Well, join the queue.
We'll wave the flag for Squid Game when actually, you know, Squid Game's probably the most Western style show that they could have come up with from that country. It just happens to be in a different language.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really carry any of the traditions of the culture in it. It's just fucking Saw the movie.
The Hunger Games, right?
Yeah, but exactly.
And the other thing is that it's been so big that they're now going to waste a lot of money trying to find the next Squid Game when the next Squid Game is actually not going to look anything like Squid Game.
It might be a horror. Might be a horror from Denmark or something. Yeah, exactly.
Or some Danish cooking show is probably going to be the next Squid Game.
As long as it's from Denmark, yeah.
Anyway, very interesting. And yeah, that's. I thought that OA was just. Was great though. Like
great. Good. I've enjoyed it because it's not an obvious one to do, you know. And actually doing two episodes in a pop is great because it means that in a month we can maybe take a rest for a bit and then come back with another rewatch a bit later on in the year.
Do you know what? Well, listen, by the time what we need to talk about, by the time we get through OA, it'll be Succession time.
Oh, hallelujah. Thank you very much for listening. Really hope you enjoyed the journey, the OA part one journey. Thanks for joining us with it. A bit of a leap of faith, literally. Thanks. We'll be back on Monday with a regular Dragoncast episode, finale of season four. And next week, the first two episodes of OA part two. Until then.
I'm doing this.
We're doing
it next time.
Yeah, if you can't hear us. Bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter at @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@daftdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for DragonCast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside is very much appreciated. Dragoncast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, and is a Daft Doris production. Drakkaris.
Hey, Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.